divine or otherwise, was gone, or at least out of reach. Her followers were kept at a distance, so they could not see that her eyes were dark hollows, that her breath came in frightened gasps. She walked slowly, tentatively, her driftwood bones fragile in her body, this sickly girl upon whom all their hopes rested. On the surface, a new king ruled with his shadow army, and he demanded that his son's summoner be returned. He offered threats and rewards, but the answer he received came in the form of a challenge from an outlaw the people had dubbed the Prince of the Air. He struck along the northern border, bombing supply lines, forcing the Shadow King to renew trade and travel across the fold with nothing but luck and Inferni fire to keep the monsters at bay. Some say this challenger was a Lansoff prince. Some say he was a Fjerdan rebel who refused to fight alongside witches. But all agreed he must have powers of his own. The saint rattled the bars of her underground cage. This was her war, and she demanded freedom to fight it. The priest refused. But he'd forgotten that before she'd become a Grisha and a saint, she'd been a ghost of Keremsin. She and the boy had hoarded secrets, as Pelyakin hoarded treasure. They knew how to be thieves and phantoms, how to hide strength as well as mischief. Like the teachers at the Duke's estate, the priest thought he knew the girl and what she was capable of. He was wrong. He did not hear their hidden language, did not understand the boy's resolve. He did not see the moment the girl ceased to bear her weakness as a burden and began to wear it as a guise. Chapter 1. I stood on a carved stone balcony, arms spread, shivering in my cheap robes, and tried to put on a good show. My kefta was patchwork, sewn together from scraps of the gown I was wearing the night we fled the palace, and garish curtains that I'd been told came from a defunct theater somewhere near Sala. Beads from the lobby chandeliers made up the trim. The embroidery at the cuffs was already coming undone. David and Jenya had done their best, but there were limited resources underground. From a distance, it did the trick, sparkling gold in the light that seemed to emanate from my palms, sending bright glimmers over the ecstatic faces of my followers far below. Up close, it was all loose threads and false shine. Just like me, the threadbare saint. The apparat's voice boomed through the white cathedral, and the crowd swayed, eyes closed, hands raised, a field of poppies, arms like pale stalks shaken by some wind I couldn't feel. I followed a choreographed series of gestures, moving deliberately so that David and whichever Inferni was helping him this morning could track my movements from their position in the chamber, hidden just above the balcony. I dreaded morning prayers, but according to the priest, these false displays were a necessity.
"It is a gift you give your people, Sancta Alina," he said. "It is hope."
Actually, it was an illusion, a pale suggestion of the light I'd once commanded. The golden haze was really Inferni fire, reflected off a beaten mirror dish that David had fashioned from some salvaged glass. It was something like the dishes we'd used in our failed attempt to stave off the Darkling's horde during the battle in Os Alta. We'd been taken by surprise, and my power, our planning, all of David's ingenuity, and Nikolai's resourcefulness hadn't been enough to stop the slaughter. Since then, I'd been unable to summon so much as a sunbeam, but most of the apparat's flock had never seen what their saint could really do, and for now, this deception was enough. The apparat finished his sermon. That was the signal to end. The Inferni let the light flare bright around me. It jumped and wavered erratically, then finally faded as I dropped my arms. Well, now I knew who was on fire duty with David.